All right. Happy New Year's Eve. I am live. Thought I'd get Israel, was hoping to get Israel, but he is indeed in, he is in having some New Year's Eve fun. Here I am. So we're going to catch up after the game, and we're going to talk about what transpired in the Sugar Bowl this time tomorrow night with Gunnar Stockton and the Dogs up against Mike Freeman's Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So welcome in. This episode is presented by betonline.ag. If you want to bet it, they have it at betonline.ag, your number one source for all your sports wagering needs. It is the number one most trusted gambling site on the internet. If you want to bet live action, they have it. If you want to bet college football, they have it. NFL, yes. NBA, NHL, yes. Golf, anything. They even have a live casino as well. So get in on the action on BetOnline and make sure you get in on the world's most trusted sports wagering site. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. So, listen, this is going to be a really, really exciting matchup. This is, again, this has been, as I'm going live right now watching Penn State and Boise State, which Boise State's putting up a really, really good fight. They had a good game plan against Penn State, and the winner of this game will get the winner of the Sugar Bowl between the Georgia Bulldogs and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So I'm sure a lot of you Georgia fans are listening to this game or watching this game right now to see what Penn State has to offer. But as far as the Notre Dame game, this is going to be an interesting contest. This is going to be an interesting matchup here for Georgia, because Notre Dame does so many things well. They play extremely well up front. They run the ball really well with Love, and defensively they get after you, man. And it's something that they're going to have their hands full against Notre Dame and against, what they do really well, which is run the ball. They do play action. Riley Leonard is as good of a quarterback as anybody. And, I like the way he plays. So in their last game, I don't know how to judge Notre Dame, because they dismantled Indiana. And I know it was a 10-point game, and you're probably saying, okay, well, it was just a 10-point game. Pump the brakes here. But I don't think Indiana had any sort of shot here. But Riley Leonard, Jeremiah Love, Bo Collins, Jaden Greathouse, and Mitchell Evans on offense. Defensively, Jack Kaiser, Xavier Watts, Drake Bowe, Aiden Shuler, and Jalen Sneed, all key playmakers for Notre Dame and guys that this Georgia team have to contend with. Offensively, you got quite a bit to stop, because Riley Leonard at Duke, if you remember him from Duke, he was really good. He led that Duke team and was pivotal in making sure that Duke team was viable. And so you can only imagine, with some more seasoning, just what they can do and just how they can hurt you. And so, if you want to get an idea of what Riley Leonard can do, he's good at extending plays. He's not really a runner, but he's somebody that needs to be contained. He's not quite Haynes King, where Haynes King is, just as dangerous as a runner, as he is a passer. And so, Riley Leonard, he's an elite thrower. He's an elite passer. He's good enough extending the play. So if you get out of your rush lanes, if you're not disciplined with your rush, and if you don't give him fits, he'll sit back there and pick you apart, and he can extend the play if you feel like missing tackles. So you have to still keep him contained. You still have to rush controlled, and you still have to kind of get after him. So that's going to be the key for Georgia's defense. I mean, I think you let Jalen Walker loose. You let CJ Allen, I think, is going to have a big game. Chaz Chambliss has really come on of late. Makai, I think it's going to be, this defense is going to be something that's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I mean, the defensive line is going to have their work cut out for them. Jeremiah Love is as good of a runner as anybody. This defensive backfield, they're going to have to really communicate. They're going to really have to play through the ball, and they're going to have to defend the pass. And so Notre Dame just gives you a lot of different things to frustrate you. And so this is, again, I think it's going to be something where you really have to be on top of your game to be able to do this. So Notre Dame, I think, presents a really, really good, really good opponent here. And I'm excited about this game because it's going to be a true test for Georgia. Georgia can get through this game. I think they match up well against Penn State because Penn State in this game just hasn't looked like that dominant team. I think they're fortunate they're going against Boise State, and Boise State, as hard as they're playing, I just don't think they're going to have the juice. But it's going to be, it's going to be something to behold in the semifinal. And I think if Georgia, this will be Georgia's biggest test up until the final. So for Georgia's offense, that's kind of where I want to focus because the biggest story is Gunnar Stockton, right? The biggest story for this game is Georgia's backup quarterback is in. Carson Beck, he's gone for elbow surgery. I had a UCL injury in the Texas game in the SEC championship right at the end of the first half. Gunnar Stockton come in the second half and really just kind of ran things. Now, the quote that really stands out to me is when Kirby came out and said, hey, this group plays harder for Gunnar. And that kind of made me think, it's like, well, do they believe in Gunnar? Is there something to Gunnar not is there something to Gunnar not having that celebrity status that Carson Beck kind of developed with his Instagram influencer girlfriend and the Lamborghini NIL deal? And, did Carson Beck let some of this get to his head? It's possible. He had a tough year to begin with, but I think when you factor in all that other stuff, the first thing that comes to your mind is you have to think that those things were distractions for Carson Beck, and he just didn't have as good of a year. Didn't take care of the ball as good as he did a year ago. And some of that is on him. Some of that is on the fact that, Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, and then the backs, Milton and Dejon Edwards, those four go to the NFL, they leave, and all of a sudden you're left with this big void. You're not sure what you have in the running game. ETN is really good. Nate Frazier is really, really good. And they've shown flashes, but they haven't been those dominant running backs like what you had in Milton and Edwards. And then you have your two biggest targets, Ladd McConkey, who's tearing it up as a rookie for the Chargers, and Brock Bowers, who just, I think, broke the rookie tight end record and might be in line for like just a general tight end record. The dude I maintain Brock Bowers is an alien, but you lose those guys off your team. And you think of the impact that it had, and this Georgia offense just hasn't been able to, they've flashed, they've had really good moments, but I just don't think they've been as explosive since those guys left. And, they have some really good guys, but like they just, for whatever reason, especially in the first half, they get going slow and they just can't quite get out of the gates. Right. And some of that is Carson Beck. Some of that is him, holding the ball too long, waiting for guys to get open. With Brock Bowers, you knew exactly where he was going to be, and you knew if you just threw in his direction, he was going to come down with it. Ladd McConkey, you knew. You throw in his direction, he's going to come down with it, right? He's going to beat his guy. He's going to get separation. He's going to make the play. With Georgia's receivers, they're not creating as much separation. And then when they do, you deliver a good ball, and they drop it. Or, you get in some situations to where it's just a lot of things have gone wrong for this Georgia offense. In steps Gunnar Stockton. All of a sudden, everyone, and I don't know if it's because they knew they had to with the new quarterback. They knew they had to step up and focus to be able to support him, be able to finish that game. Or they know he's a dude. And he showed his toughness. There was a play where he got flushed and he ran over somebody on the sideline. Of course, the play at the end of the game that brought Carson Beck back in to hand off the game winner, where he got destroyed, his helmet popped off, and he held on to the football. And everything in between, it showed his toughness, it showed his grit, it showed his resolve, and it showed that the moment wasn't too big for him. Now, where I get concerned is the lack of reps for Gunnar Stockton is, does he see the defense as well as he needs to? Are things still moving way too fast? And that's possible because he's a redshirt freshman. That's possible, right? He hasn't had any real reps except for a half of football against Texas. And they made sure to blitz him heavily and then they did a good job of mixing up coverages. Is Notre Dame's defense as good as Texas? I don't know. It remains to be seen. But nonetheless, it is a college Division I defense, and that is the baby of the head coach, Marcus Freeman. So you have to think that this defense is going to come out with a really good game plan against Gunnar Stockton and really try to confuse him. Now, one of the factors that I think worked against Gunnar Stockton in the SEC championship and why people, I think, have pause is because the game plan was really developed for Carson Beck. And I don't think there was a whole lot of avenue, because they didn't anticipate him getting hurt or getting pulled or anything. There wasn't a whole lot of avenue, because Gunnar Stockton and Carson Beck have different skill sets. They both can throw the hell out of the football, but they have different skill sets. We know that, right? Gunnar Stockton is a runner. And I think for him to be good, you have to incorporate that. You have to incorporate the quarterback run, RPOs, and maybe even some option stuff, some zone read stuff, or just some things to get Gunnar Stockton moving with his legs. Because the guy, if he can settle down, he can make the reads. He's got the arm. He's got the talent. He can lead this team to a national championship. It's just he's got to settle down and really kind of focus in on the game plan. And I think Mike Bobo, hopefully, over this time period since the Texas game, has really done his research, reached out to people who have quarterbacks like Gunnar Stockton, and just kind of and watch other games, watch what Georgia Tech did with Haynes King, watch what Vanderbilt did with Diego Pavia, and really just kind of figure out, okay, what is the best way to function with Gunnar Stockton? I love the idea. He's probably thinking he loves the idea of having Gunnar Stockton, but how do you really use him? Do you use him like they did with Stetson Bennett, right? Stetson Bennett was a very much a factor in the run game. Now, he was probably faster than Gunnar Stockton, but he's very much a factor in the run game. And he was, but his leadership qualities were through the freaking roof, man. And this was, I think Stetson Bennett, just on pure guts alone, led this team and made some plays because he was a 2-star, 5'10", 190-pound quarterback. And you would have thought he was Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson back there, just with his swagger and what he believed he could do. The dude made throws that no one knew he was capable of making, and he just kept doing it. And he got better and took care of the ball a lot better as he grew as a starter. And next thing you know, boom, he leads Georgia to two national championships. And it wasn't really expected for him to do so. And people wanted JT Daniels, and people wanted to see what the backups look like. And I think people wanted to get Stetson Bennett out of there early on. And then when they realized that, hey, this guy keeps improving, this guy just keeps winning, this guy just has some sort of swagger, they stuck with it. So can Gunnar Stockton have that kind of swagger? Can he have that kind of effect on this team? I think you see the uplifting going on around him. And I think that's going to play a big factor into this game, because if the guys believe, they will make the plays for him. They will go the extra yard. They will stretch out for that tough throw. They'll block down the field. They'll do all the little things that they probably haven't been doing. There's extra focus, A, because it's the playoff, and B, because they know that, hey, Gunnar Stockton is putting in his work. So we got to be on our game too. So I think Georgia will be fine. I think they'll have a really good game plan for Gunnar Stockton. I think he has plenty of resources, plenty of guys to throw to. I think plenty in the run game. If they stick to their winning formula of run the ball, get the ball to the tight ends, find Dylan Bell, find Dominic Lovett crossing the field, and let them do their thing with the yards after the catch, I think they have a good game plan, because their defense is going to show out. Defense is going to stop Jeremiah Love, and defense is going to get after the passer. I think Riley Leonard's going to have a tough time, and they've had several weeks to prepare. And so this is going to be, again, one of those type of games where you just, at a certain point, you just see that Notre Dame's just outmatched, and they're going to put up a good fight. It's going to be a good game for a while, and it may be a good game for a long time, but it might be I could see it being like the flip version of what they did to Indiana, where it's a close game on the scoreboard, but it's not really that close. And it's going to be an interesting contest. So yes, Chris, to summarize it, Gunnar has that it factor. Absolutely. He has that it factor. And that's the it factor that you need. And that's what makes these guys believe. That's what makes these guys just really jump in that fire and play at an extra high level. I think Carson Beck had it. I think he had that it factor, and I think he lost it. And it's sad to see, but I think he lost that it factor. And I think he got disconnected with the team through all of his NIL stuff. Gunnar Stockton drives a beat up forward. When I saw that, I was like, dogs by 100, right? So that's one of those things where you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, this game can really, really be interesting. Notre Dame, for them, they have to contend with the tight ends, Lawson Lucky, who's becoming an absolute weapon. Oscar Delp, who's a weapon in his own right. I think you have those two guys at your disposal. Go lots of 12 personnel so that you can run. You can run with Gunner. You can run with Frazier. You can run with ETN. Get ETN involved in the pass game. Dominic Lovett, Dylan Bell, get them involved in the pass game. Arian Smith, if he's having a good night, which I think in a weather-controlled dome, he should have a good night because there's no weather conditions to mess up his ability to catch the ball. If he can catch a deep shot, if he catches his first pass, he's going to have a good game. If he drops it, he's going into the tank. You might as well just send him home. But it's going to be a game that it's going to come down to big plays. Can Georgia hit some explosives? Can they limit Notre Dame's explosives? Can they contain Jeremiah Love? Can they get Gunnar Stockton involved in the run game? Because I think that's going to be the plus one quarterback run game. If you can get to it, it's an absolute weapon. And then, of course, special teams as well. Special teams has to be a weapon for you. They have to flip the field. Your coverage units have to do a good job of tackling in space, and the first guy down there has to make the stop, or the punters have to get the hang time and get the field position. You know, the return guys have got to be able to create yards, and maybe the coverage team can create a turnover and steal a possession, or, you know, things like that. So special teams, when they have a chance, can really affect the outcome of the game. Whereas like you get a chance to, if you get stalled out around midfield, you can pin them deep and really just kind of control that field position as you're trying to figure things out offensively. And then all of a sudden, maybe you break one, you know, things like that, I think can really change the course of the game. Riley Leonard for Notre Dame, if you can get shots on him, with Jalen Walker and Michael Williams and, you know, Nazir Stackhouse, Warren Brinson, if those guys can swarm, CJ Allen, I think, has to have a huge game. They've got to be able to tackle well in space. I think teams that have had success have really been able to take advantage of space. Georgia Tech took advantage of the space that Georgia gave them. Fortunately for the Dogs, Georgia Tech wasn't able to take advantage for the full game, and they ended up losing it in 8 overtimes. Texas was not able to take advantage of the space, and Georgia didn't really give them much space to try to take advantage of anyway. So it's one of those things where you have to control this game. You have to control the tempo. You have to control the pace. You have to control the field, the clock, all of that stuff. So the atmosphere, I have to imagine, as well as Georgia fans travel, I have to imagine it's going to be a sea of black and red. I just have to imagine that. I mean, I think Notre Dame fans travel well too, but I mean, there's, you know, the last time Georgia played on the road against Notre Dame, they took over Notre Dame Stadium. The sea of red took over Notre Dame Stadium. And so that's really kind of telling. So if Georgia can really get advantage of the crowd, they can create a raucous environment. They can create an environment that is really, really tough on Notre Dame, even in a neutral site environment. Georgia plays really well in the Sugar Bowl. Aside from that one year against Texas where Sam Ehlinger, the famous or infamous at this point, we're back that game. That's the only game they didn't play particularly well, which they played okay. They just didn't play well enough. They played well against Baylor the next year in the Sugar Bowl. You know, obviously the famous Hawaii game where Hawaii was supposed to come in and be this team that put Georgia on upset alert, and Georgia said, nah, and they were a non-factor. Rest in peace, Colt Brennan. But, you know, this is a really, really fun game for Georgia and Georgia fans, because I think Georgia fans like going to New Orleans. So this is a trip they get fired up about. I know they would have packed out the Peach Bowl, and I wish that they would have created that real big home field advantage. But I think secretly deep down that Georgia fans really like that this game's in New Orleans, because it gives them a trip to take on New Year's, and it gives them a destination to where they're just far enough away to where it's fun and enticing for Georgia fans to travel, but also you're close enough to home to really get that big, to really get that big influx of crowd. So this is going to be a fun game, man. This is going to be something that I think you'll look at and say, okay, and it's going to come down to the start, right? You start fast. I think Georgia blows them out, right? You start fast. You rip the ball down the field first series, and you punch one in, you know, 6, 7, 8 plays. You punch one in, and then you get a 3-and-out, or you get a 3-and-out and go punch one, you know, whatever combination of getting a 3-and-out and then scoring a quick touchdown or fairly quick touchdown, I think is the key to Georgia getting comfortable into this game and really just kind of getting into a groove. I think in the SEC championship, they got into a groove a little bit. Second half, they did a lot of great things. Defense stepped up in a major, major way and created opportunities for Gunnar Stockton to kind of get comfortable. Now Gunnar Stockton's going to have that game plan, and they're going to lean on their run. They're going to lean on their run game. They're going to lean on the tight ends, and they're going to try to, hopefully, they don't try to play a horizontal game, because Notre Dame's good enough to where they can beat a horizontal game. I think Georgia has to play. I think they can do horizontal things, but I don't think they can play their whole game horizontally. I think they're going to have to really stretch it vertically. There's some games. I think the Alabama game, when they missed that first deep shot on the first series, I feel like they tried to go horizontal for most of the first half. I think they were kind of in a shell a little bit, kind of shook when Arian Smith dropped that deep shot. And it almost seemed like they were afraid to go vertical again. And bad things started happening. You know, they started when Georgia's really good, they're able to run the ball and push it vertical on play action. When they're really good and when their offense is clicking on all cylinders, that's what they're able to do. And you add the element of Gunnar Stockton being able to, you know, insert himself into the run game. I think that brings a whole new element to what Georgia can do offensively. And I think Mike Bobo is I think he's licking his chops here. And you know, honestly, with Bobo, and you guys can, you know, give me your opinions on that. I think Mike Bobo, you see kind of two sides of him, right, when he's calling plays. I think you can tell when he's going to the sheet and he doesn't really have a flow of the game, and it kind of feels that way. It kind of feels out of sync, and you can tell when he kind of gets into it a little bit. And then you can tell when, you know, old habits die hard for Mike Bobo, or for anybody really, but in this case, for this example, for Mike Bobo, you can tell when old habits die hard and he gets back into some of his old Bobo stuff. I think those years with Todd Monken he spent 2 years, Monken was here for 4. And I think that was, you know, that was the best thing to happen to him, because he was able to, you know, learn how to design, you know, an explosive offense that really kind of took advantage of what quarterbacks were good at. It was kind of like it wasn't a one size fits all, or your quarterback has to fit into this. You know, it was kind of one of those, hey, Stetson Bennett can do X, Y, Z. We're going to make sure our offense covers X, Y, Z, not P, D, Q, right? And so I think before, Georgia had to have a specific quarterback. And, you know, in college at Georgia, you can recruit that, but when you recruit to a specific type of quarterback, you're not always going to get that. And it doesn't always play out the way you think it's going to play out when you evaluate it, because going from high school to college is a lot differently, or trying to find that perfect fit for your offense is not an easy thing. So I think what you have to do is you find a couple of skills that you really like, and then find a quarterback that has those skills. and then kind of develop what you have around those skills. And I think he's done a better job of doing that. I think he, you know, he took advantage of what Carson Beck was really able to do. And I think he was kind of hamstrung with what Carson Beck couldn't do through the middle of the season, where he went into a massive slump. And it just, you know, it's hard to call plays when your quarterback is just giving the ball away like that. And you don't want to pull him, because he goes into the tank, and next thing you know, your season's shot because your quarterback went into the tank and just couldn't get out of the tank because you pulled him. And now he lost confidence all over again. So I think they did a good job managing Carson Beck, even though there was times where I'm like, okay, we have to see what Gunnar Stockton have, or we have to see what Jaden Rashada has. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that looks like, but we have to see. I you know, there's a couple games like that Florida game. I was like, we just got to go to a relief pitcher. And to their credit, they didn't. And, you know, I think they did the right thing there. But, you know, we'll see just kind of how good Mike Bobo is at adapting his playbook this game, because Gunnar Stockton, different skill set. We'll see. He'll pull out those chapters, and he'll put away some of the other chapters that Gunnar Stockton's not good at, hopefully. And I'm really excited about what kind of game plan that they have. So this is going to be one of those where it's going to be one of those games where I think you're going to see more vertical, because Gunnar Stockton, I think, can push the ball down the field. You're going to see a lot more quarterback run, which I'm excited about that. I'm ready for Georgia to have a dual threat guy. And Gunnar Stockton is just that. He's a dual threat guy. He runs. I think with his it factor, and I think with his running ability, I don't know that anybody has the it factor quite like Diego Pavia, but he reminds me of that type of player where he can run. He's a better thrower. He's a better passer than Diego Pavia. And they're both equal runners. And I think Diego Pavia might be a little more athletic than Gunnar Stockton, but Gunnar Stockton, I think, is, you know, right there with him. So this is going to be a fun offense to watch with Gunnar Stockton. I cannot wait moving forward to see what happens there. Receiver drops hindered Bobo and Beck as well. Yeah, that didn't help. That doesn't help. And that's part of the slump. Like when Carson Beck, when he went into a slump, you look at what happened, right? I think you could pin it to it started right at that Alabama game. That deep shot to Arian Smith, to answer your question, Clay, I think that started a very bad downward spiral for Carson Beck. I think he lost confidence. I think he lost confidence in his receivers a little bit, because, you know, Dominic Lovett had some dropsies. Dylan Bell, who doesn't drop anything, I feel like, started dropping passes. I think that everyone started pressing a little bit because they just felt like they had to, because you didn't have that get out of jail free card with Brock Bowers or Ladd McConkey. Like, those guys were automatic. And now you have guys that aren't alpha guys, right? You have, I'll leave this up. You don't have that alpha guy. Like you had with Ladd McConkey was an alpha guy, right? He didn't have the stature of an alpha guy, but he was, and you can tell he was, and you can tell he is, because he is with the San Diego Chargers, the LA Chargers. Jim Harbaugh has done a phenomenal job with him. I mean, there's a reason why he's integrated right in with that offense, and he's now the number one guy, right? Quentin Johnston had to raise his game to compete with Ladd McConkey, but there's a reason why they have a viable passing game now, and it's Ladd McConkey. So you lose those guys, it gets tough, right? You know, Dylan Bell is a great utility guy. He's a great Swiss Army knife. He's not an alpha guy, right? He's not George Pickens. He's not Ladd McConkey. He's not – Georgia hasn't really had much of that. You know, Ra-Ra Thomas for a minute was that alpha guy, but he got in trouble. Colby Young was that alpha guy. I thought Colby Young was going to be that guy. Then he got in trouble. And I think he's back, but I think he got in trouble. So it's one of those things where you just find it frustrating. Carson Beck's holding on to the ball too long also, because those guys aren't getting open. And then he, you know, either gets forced into throws or, you know, makes bad decisions or tries to fit throws into windows that he has no business fitting into. That, you know, all of that, all the above really just kind of messes that up. expect Gunner throws a more catchable ball, if that makes sense. Yeah. I think Gunner has better instincts than Carson Beck. Carson Beck, I think, has – I love the confidence that Beck had with some of the throws he tried to make. But I think he tried to make NFL-type throws to prove something. You know, I think this year was about proving draft stock and, you know, NIL and, you know, I think it's either Haley or Hannah Cavender, whichever one of the twins is his girlfriend. You know, just all that kind of stuff just kind of spiraled for him. Gunner, I think – He's more of a true quarterback, I think. And I think he watches more film. I think he just has a better and I think he has better anticipation. So I think when he delivers the ball, he knows when to put touch, he knows when to zip it. He knows, like, he just kind of knows what kind of pass needs to be thrown, if that makes sense, actually. So that's why it's more catchable, because he understands where it needs to be, what kind of velocity it needs to have. And, you know, I think outside of that really bad interception he threw against Texas trying to close the game, that was horrendous. With a kid, you're going to have that mistake, you know, and I don't hold that against him. He just, you know, I think he got to be a little bit smarter than that, but I think in the heat of the moment, he just kind of threw it up there. But yeah, I do think Gunner, honestly, Gunner helps himself out by being able to run too. I think that helps him. And so he is definitely, I think better just all around, I think, because his athleticism and his running ability helps him. To answer your question, yes, they should at least. If they want to really help out Gunner, they're going to run 12 personnel, because two of their best receivers are Oscar Delp and Lawson Lucky. So I think if you're not running 12 personnel a lot of the time, because honestly with Georgia, you can have 12 personnel out on the field, but get into like 11 personnel type sets, or you can even get into a 10 personnel type set where you have like four wide and just have those two guys in the slots, motion them around, shift them around. You could have Lucky on the line, Delp in the slot, Lucky in the slot, Delp on the line. Like, those two guys are extremely versatile. So I think if you don't have those two guys on your field, I don't think you're taking full advantage of what you have. The only other way that you would have only one of those guys, if you went 21 personnel where you had Frazier, ETN, and either Delp or Lucky, I think that's a good personnel group. I think any group that you can – maximize backs and tight ends right now with this particular team is what you want. And until they can find that true lead dog, pun intended, I think 12 personnel for the time being is where you want to be. And then they had that big behemoth tight end that I saw in practices. So what do you guys think about Riley Leonard? You know, I talked a little bit about him at the top of the show, but Riley Leonard, I think for this defense, they're going to have their hands full with him, because, you know, he's as good of a, I thought he was, when he left Duke, I thought he was going to go to the NFL, truthfully. And I think he's going to do really well in the NFL. I don't know that he's going to be a first rounder, but I think he can be a backup and spot starter in the NFL. I think he's got a lot of ability. I think he's got a lot of smarts. You know, Riley Leonard is somebody that I think is really good in play action, because he can, he can really deliver a good fake and then pop up and has a quick enough release to be able to get the ball out. And he has this capability to where, you know, if you do diagnose it and it does go to shit, he can spin out of it and go, or he can tuck the ball up and run. So it's, I'm a big, you know, until this week, I was a big fan of Riley Leonard. And I hope he has the worst game of his career this tomorrow against Notre Dame. But I think it's this defense is going to have their hands full with Jeremiah Love and Riley Leonard. So I think a lot of people, and that's Arian with an A. I think a lot of people hope, you know, I think lately, because he's had a lot of drops this year, so I think a lot of people are like, Arian Smith, he sucks, and they're just dead set on Arian Smith sucks, right? But little do they know, season before last, the last national championship, Arian Smith had a monster catch to get the Dogs back in it against Ohio State. Like, Arian Smith, just for whatever reason, his focus just hasn't been there this year, and he's had a really tough year. But that dude gets open more than anybody I know. And he's fast. He's a true sprinter. So he's going to get behind the defense. He's going to have his chances, okay? He's going to have a chance to have a really great game tomorrow night. And if he does, that's what's expected, because that's what his ability is like. If he doesn't, I'll be more surprised. But he just got to settle down, make the play. Yeah, Jeremiah Love is legit scary. That dude can go, man. That 98-yard touchdown he had against Indiana was outstanding. Of course, I don't know who deserved to be there, but I know Indiana wasn't the answer for a playoff team. I know they went 11-1, but all 11-1s aren't created equal. So, I think Notre Dame really dismantled that team. And despite it only being 10 points, Notre Dame squandered a bunch of opportunities to make that game a 50. That game could have been a 50-point game. They squandered a lot of opportunities themselves to really blow that game wide open. And, Indiana just kind of hung around, but they were never really going to do anything because they couldn't throw the ball at all. They couldn't do anything. So that's kind of the concern there with what Indiana brought to the table. So score prediction. I'm gonna come back to that one, right? What gives me the most worries against Notre Dame? Jeremiah Love and Riley Leonard. Their ability to really kind of affect the game. Jeremiah Love commands so much attention that you're gonna have to rely on one-on-one matchups. Dalen Everett, and whoever else is playing corner, whoever else is in the game on the other side. It could be Ellis Robinson. It could be whoever, KJ Bolden, whoever's in the game there. I think you're going to have to tackle well in space. You're going to have to win your one-on-one. You're going to have to defend the pass in a one-on-one type setting, because you're going to have to commit so many people to the run. And I think Notre Dame can do that. What doesn't worry me, or what used to worry me, but not really because of injury now, I think Georgia's going to be fine running the ball against Notre Dame. They are much weaker now against the run with one of their big injuries they had to their defensive linemen. So it's I really worry more just about stopping Jeremiah Love and the attention he's going to command. Cassidy, yeah, I can't wait for the game tomorrow night either. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't worry, I can't wait either. So Indiana is not Georgia. That is true. That is very, very true. Indiana had, despite being a 10-point game, like I said, Motley, they had no shot. Indiana had no shot whatsoever. They were never going to win that game, ever, 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 because Notre Dame couldn't figure it out either. Notre Dame didn't exactly set the world on fire, and they still dominated, which I think that game was more of an indictment on Indiana than it was, something pro Notre Dame. Arian made some big plays, game saving plays as well. Yeah, absolutely. Who's a better defense, and what gives you the best thoughts that gives UGA the best chance to win? Georgia has one of the best defenses in the country. Notre Dame is not terribly far behind, but Georgia definitely has a superior defense, especially up front. Jalen Walker is the Butkus Award winner. Defensively, what gives me the best thoughts and what I think gives Georgia the best chance to win is the fact that Georgia is so good against the run when they tackle well. And this, they're going to dedicate a lot to the run game. And they're going to put a lot on these DBs to cover in the pass game, but they're going to devote a lot to the run game. And this is going to, that's going to be where they hang their hat. They're going to stop Jeremiah Love, and they're going to give him, fits, and they're going to give this Notre Dame team fits to make sure that they, make sure they stop that. I think that's going to be number one. Stop Jeremiah Love, and you will make them one-dimensional, and you can tee off on Riley Leonard. Offensively, go through the tight ends. If you can feed Lucky and Delp, you will get opportunities to hit Arian Smith down the field vertically. You will get chances in the run game. If you can stay in 12 personnel, take shots down the field in 12 personnel, and be able to win, that way, I think you're going to win. So, this Penn State game is starting to kind of get out of hand, which I thought it would. I knew it would. I took Penn State minus 12 and a half. So I want to talk about some of the other games real quick too. Cayman, I didn't forget about this, but right before I end the show, I'm going to give you my score prediction, for the dog. So stay tuned on that. Don't go anywhere. I really like this. It's kind of reminiscent of the 2017 game with Jake Fromm. Looking at some of the other games, you have Texas, Arizona State. I have a hard time believing Arizona State's really going to compete in that game. I mean, Scataboo is one of my favorite backs to watch around, you know, college football, but I just don't think they could stick around for four quarters against Texas. Now, Texas, they do a lot of good things, but they haven't really beat Clemson, about the best team they've beat, honestly. But they really haven't impressed me. But I just, and even then, I may take Arizona. I would take Arizona State in the points because it's a double digit spread. But I don't think Arizona State's going to win that game. Then you go Oregon versus Ohio State. Now that game is going to be incredible. That game is, you know, a lot of people are billing that as the national championship. And rightfully so. Oregon's played extremely well all season long, you know, led by Dan Lanning, who is a Kirby Smart disciple. And you look at, you know, how things go there. It's one of those situations to where I think Oregon has the ability to stop what Ohio State does. And I think Ohio State gets themselves in trouble by trying to do things out of their character. When they played Michigan, they tried to out Michigan, and they can't do that, right? They're a passing downfield vertical team. When they played Tennessee, they played to their true identity, and they lit it up. They played extra motivated too. I think that helped, and I don't think they'll have the same energy against Oregon because that's tough to replicate. But it's it's going to be one of those situations to where, you know, Ohio State can really, if they can get some things going in the passing game like they did against Tennessee, where they're getting chunk play after chunk play after chunk play, I think they give themselves a chance. But I think Oregon's just a more complete team right now than Ohio State. And honestly, it's not a knock on Ohio State. I just think Oregon's just in a little bit better of a place. I think they're better coached. I think I would take Dan Lanning 10 times out of 10 over Ryan Day. And I would say that if I wasn't a Georgia guy who was a big fan of Dan Lanning as the defense, as Kirby's defensive coordinator. So I would say that no matter who I was a fan of, if I was a fan of Boise State, I would say that about Dan Lanning. You know, it's just the truth. So picked Ohio State to win that game when the brackets were first released. Picked them to win against Oregon, or you picked them to beat Tennessee and Oregon. Give me that clarification. Oregon plus going over 55. Notre Dame and Arizona State covering the spread. Yeah, it's gonna be a close one with Georgia and Notre Dame. I'm surprised it's double digit. I like Notre Dame in the points. I think it's gonna be tight, but as far as like the point spread in Vegas, it'll be Notre Dame. But I think Georgia's gonna end up advancing. It's gonna be a tight game. It's going to be low scoring because I think it's going to be out of the gates. It's going to be kind of slow, but yeah, Oregon is just on a different level. Oregon and Tennessee. Okay. So you're really high on Ohio State, huh? Okay. I just didn't buy it with Ohio State. All season long, they never really, you know, they never. Oh, so you have, okay. I think I must have read that wrong. So you have Notre Dame winning. Okay. That makes sense. I must have read that wrong earlier. I did read it wrong earlier. I just kind of saw final score prediction 2017. So good thing you put it first there in the sentence. I gotta stop reading the sentence. But so I just, you know, going back to Ohio State, I just really didn't buy them all season long. I mean, they never really, they did some good things, but I just think up front, they never really impressed me defensively. They just, I don't know. They just never really jumped out of the page as like a true number two team in the country, before they lost. And I just didn't buy it. I just didn't think they were good enough to run the gauntlet of a college football playoff. They may end up proving me wrong. And if they do, hats off to Ohio State. But I just don't see it. I didn't see it against Tennessee. I thought Tennessee was probably one of the hotter teams coming into the playoff, and I thought they were going to win that game. And then, of course, this Penn State, I had Penn State from a mile away. So this is this game is, you know, about to end. So, but USC talent, I think that's perfect. Lots of talent. Coach inherited, you know, Ryan Day inherited talent. It's really easy to recruit to Ohio State. He's just not able to do much with it, right? My thinking, they lost by one on home. They can beat them on a neutral site. I see that. I can see your rationale on that. You know, they played Oregon tough in Oregon. So, you know, conventional wisdom has you putting them, you know, I get it. I totally get it. Neutral site. I just think, I don't know. Like, I just think that they're going to watch that film a lot. They're going to see why they did that. And I think if you can take away Ohio State's downfield passing game, I just don't believe they can do much else. Right. I just don't believe it. And I think that caught them off guard, because I don't know that anybody's truly ready for a vertical passing attack like Ohio State has. And when Ryan Day decides, hey, this is our identity, we're going to play to it, that's tough to beat. But, like, I think Ryan Day gets caught up in his opponents and gets caught up in, like, hey, we got to beat Michigan and we got to beat them at their own game. Like, I think he gets too much into trying to out-team the team they're playing, right? And when you get busy doing that, I don't think you're worried about your own roster. I think you're just worried about winning the game. And I think you kind of get out of character a little bit. You do things that you're not good at, or you just kind of get yourself into situations to where you're just setting yourself up for failure. I think against Tennessee, he finally did that. Finally said, you know what, we're going to play to our identity and we're going to go, right? He won't be long without a job. I just think he needs to realize, and maybe he did. Maybe that was a learning experience for him. The Michigan game really kind of woke him up and led him to believe, okay, we just got to play Ohio State football. We can't try to play like anybody else. And I think he just falls into that trap, honestly. He falls into that trap. $20 million, they should be able to win. Yeah, absolutely. They should win it all with the roster they have. But they just can't. They can't get out of their own way. They cannot get out of their own way. So previous three games, UGA combined 14 points. Yeah, it's been tight. Been real tight. It's going to be much along the same lines. So before I get out of here, I think this is going to be the last thing I say. This game, I think, is going to be 27-23 in favor of Georgia. I think it's going to be a mid-scoring game. I don't think it's going to be high scoring. I don't think it's going to be super low scoring. I don't know where the over-under sits, but I imagine take the under. But I'm gonna go Georgia 27, Notre Dame 23. I'm gonna give Georgia the win here. I love Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman is a great coach, great ambassador for Notre Dame. He's really, really good. I'm happy that he's doing well at Notre Dame. I just want that journey to end for him this year. At this point, I wish we didn't see Notre Dame until later, because I really respect what Marcus Freeman has done there. And I'm glad, because if I remember correctly, y'all were about ready to run him out of town after that Northern Illinois game, right? And you lose that game, and it's like, oh boy, this is going to get bad for Coach Freeman. I just hope that people don't judge him too harshly on this, and he gets another crack somewhere else. So, and he did. Well, he got it right. So I don't think he's going to get another crack anywhere else. He's going to stay right at Notre Dame, and he's going to do really, really well. So got him into the playoff, got them playing well. We'll see kind of see where it's at. I think it's going to be a close game, always is. And I really, really love what he's been able to do with that team. I think he's got them playing with a whole new attitude, and that's important, right? That's important. That's the first thing when you're building culture, is play with that attitude. So I really like that. I agree there. They respond to him starting. There's no real tape on him. I just think Notre Dame's going to have a hard time with the quarterback plus one. It's kind of really my main thing. But Kamen, yes, good luck tomorrow. He deserved a three-year extension. That's for dang sure. He's a damn good coach, right? So with that, we'll see you tomorrow night in and hopefully Georgia plays with the same attitude. See you tomorrow night in the All-State Sugar Bowl, Georgia 27, Notre Dame 23. We'll end it there. Peace out. Continue on the chat if you'd like. Follow me at Coach Burton 36. Follow the show at Believe_in_dogs. Follow us on YouTube, anywhere you get your podcasts as well. And we'll catch you later.